This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by our bannermen, Lord Jason of House Ross, Sir Jimmy of House Nuts, Master of the Web, Lady Dawn of House Wright, Sir Chris of House Farber, Lady Tracy of House Faw, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, Sandy the Dragon, Blood of Queen Daenerys and Lady of Jameson, Lord John of House Fry, Lady Juliana of House Stradley, Sir David of House Fraser, Lady Liz of House Hendricks, Sir Matthew of House Perry, Lady Madeline of House Fritzel, Lady Adrian of House Dillard, Lady Ashley of House Gardner, Lady Lismelin of House Morales.
This episode of Bend the Knee is protected by Sir Ryan of House Turbush, Lady Sarah the Unraveler.
Our current champion is Lady Kira of House Arnold.
Our current Master of Coin is Lord Jason of House Ross.
Squire to Sir Matt, Lady Betsy of House Hudson.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we're into Sansa 7 of A Clash of Kings. And in our Raven, we will be talking about the Unkiss.
Yeah, Ez, interesting chapter we have here today. You know, this kind of actually extends our theme a little bit. In these another short chapter, which we've been on in this whole Battle of the Blackwater, but this chapter, you know, is one that people often refer to and say, is Sansa really an unreliable narrator? Well, last week we were questioning Tyrion as an unreliable narrator, which doesn't get as much sort of traction, or less, it's a little more fringe out there that people are saying, well, is Tyrion an unreliable narrator? Maybe. But here we have a chapter in which everyone, the general consensus is that Sansa's telling of these events is in fact unreliable. So can we say that Tyrion last week, you know, if you start to question his, should we look at his a little bit further? So this is really a chapter where if we have an unreliable narrator, I think we got to start challenging quite a bit more.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And is what's the reason behind the character being like, there's levels of unreliability and stuff like that. And so I guess we'll talk about it later on, but I mean, there's going to be a reason behind it and a reason to do it. And that's what George says. There is meaning to this, and it will come up later and we'll get there. But he said that years ago, and we just want the next book, man. We don't, even if you Seriously. Forget this thread, George, it's okay. Just give us the next book. But anyway, yeah.
Absolutely. So that's what we'll be taking a look today at our sort of main chapter. So Ez, now that we're going to get going here, man, how you doing? You're still over in Germany. How's everything going over there?
Yeah, it's going well. It is. I'm recording right next to a balcony, so you might hear the rain. As it has just started to rain here quite a bit. It's been great, man. And if you look at the video version, you can see I've got kind of a little new setup in here. You might see a couple cats walking around. It's a little
What's
different.
The German word for cat?
I'm embarrassed to say. I
don't know.
Nine, meaning no, I have no idea.
Okay.
I know a few German words. Like, if you want to say something's really good, you could say, like, if you want to say it's good, you say it's gut. It's gut.
Yeah.
If you want to say it's really good, you say it's sehr gut. Okay?
Okay.
All right. And that's about all I know, and I think that's all you need to know. You just say to people all the time, sehr gut, and they're like, yeah, press guy. He's fluent.
And they get it. Okay.
Perfect. He's fluent.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, but right, yeah, man. I'm great. How have you been, man? What's going on?
I'm good. I feel like not quite a lot has really been going on over here. We got another sort of record heat wave here in Portland. Rather hot outside. I'm hoping we don't get any more wildfires, anything like that. Everything so far so good. Zagut. Right? Is that?
Yeah, that's
there
right.
We go.
Zagut. Zagut.
There we go. So everyone's like, okay, all right, well, here we go. Now this is a German podcast. I've been watching the Olympics. Olympics are still going on. USA holding strong with the medals. Medal lead. We no longer have the most gold medals, but that's okay. So, yeah, we've been watching that. We've been dominating swimming, you know. We were talking about that. Why are we – It just seems weird, right? You know, I guess we're just really good swimmers here in the United States. So it's just what we...
That's what we do.
I suck at swimming.
I got to flying fish in YMCA swimming school, and
got past tadpole.
I was so proud to get to flying fish. Let me tell you. There were levels after that. Porpoise, dolphin, blue whale.
Shark.
I was like, who wants to get to blue whale? Is that really the
best swimming? You and I probably much long before Ez and I really knew who each other were, because we did. It was like all of Knox County, Ohio, went to swimming lessons together. It's like third grade.
Yeah. Yes.
We probably went to swimming lessons together.
You were probably in one of the lanes over there struggling, and I was, I'm kidding. I was struggling.
I was not very good. Literally, I jumped right in, and they're like, Pollywog, get him down. I mean,
those were the names. That's
it's
funny.
Like, I haven't even started yet. They're like, yeah, Polly is a Pollywog.
Good guy.
And I moved up to tadpole.
Matt, if you could look back in our lives and we somehow found out that we were like in like first, second, third grade, it changing in the same YMCA locker room, two lanes away from each other, that kind of stuff, you know.
There were crossovers sometimes where it's like the whole county. Because, you know, my graduating class, if I had stayed at that school, would have been like 42. I think it was like 42 or 48.
Yeah.
Good old little East Knox.
Oh yeah.
Go 100%. Bulldogs.
Yeah. You know. Dogs.
Go Bulldogs. But then Ez and I went to high school and stuff together. But yeah, I think we did, because there was a crossover there. And then there was definitely some field trips that were like crossover Knox County, Ohio field trips. And then Ez and I met in high school. But
yeah.
Probably, man. Maybe who would have known? If you go back, maybe we said something to each other or something.
Maybe we're walking into the locker room.
Might have been best swimming class friends. And we never knew it.
Yeah. And you're sitting there and you're like, I like your swimming trunks, you know? And it like made my day. And I went on. It actually helped me get through Pollywog and on to tadpole.
What if I helped? What if I helped you? You know, you have to, whatever. It's crazy.
That is crazy to think about. So.
Just crazy. Ez has got some.
I got the
earthquake over there.
This freaking cat attack. If you guys ever want to watch a funny episode of Bend the Knee, come watch this episode over on Patreon because cats are attacking.
Yeah, you do get video versions over there. Well, all right, Ez. You know, we broadcast, my friend, from globally here. This is international
podcast now, buddy.
International podcast. But you know what, also we like to talk to people across the globe and across the galaxy, okay, all the way from Australia to Houston. Do we have a pube problem? Okay. If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with their fourth generation and brand new lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet with your performance package 4.0. The orbits in your pants will feel like you're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20. Okay, as the lawnmower 4.0, it also has a 400,000K LED spotlight, which you can turn off and on when needed for more precise shave through your travels across the universe. That's freaking bright.
That is bright. And let me tell you, I don't know. The nice thing about the lights is there's an on and off switch. Okay, so you might not want to see everything that's down there. You might want to just hit it with a quick trim and then turn the lights on for a fine tune, if that makes sense, okay? But either way, the trimmer is ridiculous. I have this stuff, by the way. I have this product, okay? I'm going to go ahead and say, speaking from experience here, and let me tell you, in the 4.0 package, you do get the lawnmower, you get the trimmer, all that kind of stuff. But I'm telling you right now, one of the things that's been game changer, the ball deodorant. That stuff is real. That is real, and it's good, and it's in the package, and I'm telling you, ladies, men, whatever, I would buy it. I would buy it for a friend. I would buy it for yourself. I think it's legit. So, you know, we do these reads, and then I'm looking at this, and I get the pack. I get the whole thing, and you try it out, and let me just say this. It's, it feels like zero gravity. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, it's much better to be a hedge knight when the hedges are trimmed, okay? the whacker on the wall, the shears that guard the realms of men. So be sure to get your 20% off plus free shipping with the code fansided20 at manscaped.com. That is 20% off plus free shipping with the code fansided20 at manscaped.com for a clean Trinity and beyond. Your space balls will thank you.
Oh, so, my gosh.
As you know, where we're at with the news here, there's not we're in another lull here. No really sort of big Game of Thrones news coming out. Sort of recently, anxiously awaiting House of the Dragon. Nothing really sort of going on there. No new Winds of Winter news. But I will say I've done a little bit of digging, a little bit more into, in my rereads and my travels.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm actually ahead a little bit into next week's chapter. Feels good to get back to Daenerys, and man, just some stuff that we're going to be talking about next week. Just I don't want to skip too far ahead here, but you know, we're talking about the song. Daenerys is talking about the Song of Ice and Fire.
I know. Yeah,
the literal Song of Ice and Fire.
Like, I feel like in the books, when the actual line, like a Song of Ice and Fire, or like swearing by ice and fire, as the reeds do, is mentioned, we should pay great attention to that, because that's what the whole series is about. We say a Game of Thrones, that's the first book, but it's a Song of Ice and Fire, right? Is that Rhaegar's song? Is that an ancient song? Is that just some, you know, it's not Jenny's song, is it? I mean, it's a Song of Ice and Fire. Is it an actual song that we're going to hear, or is it just some metaphor, symbolism, whatever, in Westeros, Essos, etc.? But yeah, good point. Good point.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, there's another line in that chapter, and again, we'll talk about this more next week. But again, we're just speculating here.
Yeah.
Where she's talking about seeing Rhaegar with a young woman and a babe, and I'm just thinking, wow. You know, they go on to talk about, well, that's got to be Aegon. Is it though? They say it is. His name is Aegon. Yeah. But is it really supposed to be Jon? So just interesting stuff.
And it's crazy because you have a young woman. You could go back and say Elia, when she was young, mm-hmm. gave birth to Aegon. Okay, there's a young woman. Or Lyanna gave birth to who? And everyone's like, this is done and over, Ser Ezra. It's Jon. But Jon and who else? There's a twin birth here, my friends. There's something. That's something, too. You know, if you're like some of those other YouTube channels that we kind of follow and we watch in those theories. Like, if you want to buy into it's not John, or you think it's someone else besides John, why don't you, I'm talking about the R plus L equals J theory, right? Why not just throw out I would really hyper-focus on the twin thing and just say there was twins and they were mm-hmm. separated. And that's where you get Septa Lemoore, you get the whole thing and whatnot. And that would be radical. A twin birth is interesting to me, which takes us back to last week's thing, which is a Luke Skywalker situation. He has a twin sister. Ever since I've thought, and I reread that whole Theon situation where they talk about Jon Snow's parents and stuff like that, and it's like, well, if he has a Luke Skywalker situation, that's either something with his father or he has a twin sister, okay? Obi-Wan, why didn't you tell me?
I know. Awesome. All right, Ez. Well, I think that's sort of it for sort of news catching up. There's nothing really big. I just went and looked. Only thing George is up to, he's talking about maybe attending or not attending some sort of fantasy author thing in November. I was just searching it up there. So no new Winds of Winter news, you know.
Yeah. What we need to do, and we need to announce this on Facebook, we need to pick our next Bannerman hangout is coming up soon. We can just pick Friday or Saturday for that. You guys can come hang out in Germany if you'd like. I'd love to kind of do that with folks. So Matt's whipping out his calendar right now. Also, while he's doing that, if you get a chance, send us a message. Send us a raven or send Matt and I a message on social media if you'd like. But we're thinking about we're getting towards the end of Clash of Kings. And Matt and I, as you know, we're with the Fansided Network. We're with Minute Media now, and we've been working with them. Winter is coming. We're going to be referencing a lot of their articles now in the show and just talking about some of the cool things that we're reading over there, news, speculation, whatnot. We also always read your guys' theories. But we've thought about format changes to the show for Storm of Swords. And the amount of chapters we cover, the amount of do we bring back Follow-Up Friday? One of the things we've really thought about doing, and I've highly considered it, is bringing back Follow-Up Friday, bringing back some of the fire, okay? Because we just got, if you can't tell, like Sir Matt and I could sit here and you drop a little nugget, a little Sos Baked Martin on us, or you want to talk about alternatives to who could John's twin brother or twin sister be, we will go, we'll wrap ourselves in this intricate web that we can't get out of for entertainment, okay? Because we love talking about that kind of stuff, and we'll talk in circles until we don't even remember what we've said. But we like doing that, and Follow-Up Friday always provided a chance for us to do that, where you push us to dance and to feast, and you take us to places, you know, going, looking at the Green Grace over in Meereen, looking at some stuff that's happening with Dany, Ser Barristan Selmy, and Tyrion, and him, you know, his whole arc working towards Daenerys, and Marwyn the Mage, and so on. We could do those things again. So I guess I want to get your guys' feedback, and I really, really want to know, and that's what I'm bringing up at the beginning of the show, would you like that? Would you like to have Follow-Up Friday come back? Maybe not even every Friday, but like two Fridays a month or something. You know, just a little something extra, because we kind of are leaning towards thinking that that would be fun. And we just really need ravens and or even just a comment on YouTube, and we just can run with a
absolutely thought. Or specific theories, or just what you guys, anything and everything. It can literally be as simple as one line. Hey, like, talk about, like last week it was, hey, can you guys do a video on Mance? Yes, we can. Absolutely. Yeah. Boom. Yeah. There you go. And we turned it into an entire segment of the show. So there, it can literally just be a character question. Hey, this person says this one line and this thing, like, elaborate. Yes, as and I absolutely can. So as, all right, here's the, I'm looking at the calendar here. I'm thinking maybe we could either do the Friday, August 20th, or Saturday, the 21st. Now you're in Germany, which is 9 hours ahead of where I am, which is West Coast time in the United States. So we do need to kind of, it might be different days for you.
I could do an early in the morning thing when you guys are late at night. Let me I'll pull a Liam on us. Okay. Maglum, if Australia can do it, I can do it. Okay.
Right. Okay. So maybe perhaps we do that. What if we did that Saturday? We started maybe, what time is it there right now? We're recording on a Sunday.
It's 10 o'clock
at night.
Yes, 9 hour difference. 9 hour exactly between me and you.
Okay, so what if we do I'm trying to think here.
I mean, I'll get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. That's 9 o'clock.
Might be what we did.
Yeah. Well, I'll pour the ale. They drink it. Hey, you know me, let me tell you something right now. In Germany, I told you guys this last episode, they drink beer and they pump. They pump weights, baby. That's what they do. Okay? It's awesome.
Let's do that Saturday.
Okay.
And then, I guess I'm just trying to, it might be end up being late for you, like 1 a.m, but it would be a decent time for people who live on the East Coast, and it'd be early for me who lives on the West Coast.
Yeah. So that would be the 21st.
Yeah.
21st. Yeah, so what time? Give me an East Coast, or give me a West Coast time.
West Coast time. So it's almost 1 p.m. for me. And it's how late for you? 10?
Yeah, that would be 10 o'clock.
Well, that would make it, it's 1, so make it 4 East Coast time.
On a Friday or Saturday? You said Saturday?
So if we started now-ish.
Yeah.
It would be.
Oh, let's do it.
So 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific time, 10 p.m. German time.
Yeah, I like it.
What time zone are you in?
German time zone.
Well, okay.
I don't know. They have their own time zone.
They probably fall in line with other European countries. Because we have people who are on those Zoom hangouts that live in the United Kingdom and who live in Ireland, right?
Sure. Yeah, for sure.
Two different countries, apparently.
Right.
So. Then we go in Australia. So that's going to be it. So the 21st August, there's your time zones. You're 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. German, and you can calculate the rest.
There you go. Well done. On the fly. Good.
Yes. Absolutely here. So, okay, as well, we're about to dive into the reread here, but we're going to take a brief moment to take a listen from our sponsors here. So, all right, as with the reread this week, we are into Sansa 7 of A Clash of Kings. Sir Lancel curses Cersei for calling her son back inside the Holdfast. While the king's presence might have rallied the troops, he claims all is lost, and Cersei leaves the room. Sansa watches as Lancel falls to his knees, severely injured. She attempts to calm Cersei's guest and orders others to help Lancel receive medical care. Dantos persuades her to lock herself in her room, and when Sansa arrives at her chambers, she finds Sandor Clegane hiding in the shadows. The Hound, drunk and battered from the fighting, tells her he lost and that he should have killed Tyrion years ago. Sandor claims he is leaving King's Landing, maybe to head north somewhere. Clegane forces her to look at him and then tells her, "I could keep you safe. No one would hurt you again, or I'd kill them." Sandor then asks that she sing for him, as she promised she would. She is too frightened to remember the words of the song he wants and can only sing the mother's hymn. After that, some instincts make her cup his cheek with her fingers, and she can feel tears on his cheeks. Sandor strips off his white cloak and leaves the room. Later, Dantos returns to bring her the news of the battle, that the battle is over. King's Landing has been saved by the Tyrells and Lord Tywin and all their men. Lord Tywin held the right wing, Lord Randall Tarly the center, and Mace Tyrell commanded the left. Yet it was the vanguard that won the battle. Some say led by the ghost of King Renly, who slew Gaillard Morrigan in single combat. And then, of course, this will tie into our Raven later, which we'll talk a little bit more after this chapter, which will be the Unkiss, which is an event where Sansa remembers this chapter a little bit, you know, differently as here in the future. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about obviously a little bit in the chapter, but it's more so going to be saved for our Raven here. So we start this chapter, right? When Sir Lancel Lannister told the queen that the battle was lost, she turned her empty wine cup in her hands and said, "Tell my brother, sir." Her voice was distant, as if the news were of no great interest to her. "Your brother's likely dead." Sir Lancel's surcoat was soaked with his blood, seeping out under his arm. When he arrived in the hall, the sight of him had made some of the guests scream. "He was on the bridge of boats when it broke apart, we think. Sir Mandon's likely gone as well, and no one can find the Hound. Gods be damned. Cersei, why did you have to fetch Joffrey back to the castle? The gold cloaks are throwing down their spears and running, hundreds of them. When they saw the kings leaving, they lost all heart. The whole Blackwater's awash with wrecks and fire and corpses, but we could have held if Osney Kettleback pushed past him. There's fighting on both sides of the river now, Your Grace. It may be that some of Stannis' lords are fighting each other. No one's sure. It's all confused over there. The Hound's gone. No one knows where. And Sir Balin's fallen back inside the city. The riverside's theirs. They're ramming the King's Gate again. And Sir Lancel's right. Your men are deserting the walls and killing their own officers. There's mobs at the Iron Gate and the Gate of God's fighting to get out. And Flea Bottom's one great drunken riot. So then Sansa goes on to say, "Gods be good," Sansa thought. "It's happening. Joffrey lost his head, and so have I." She begins looking for Ellen Payne, but the King's justice was not seen. She's like, "I can feel him, though. He's close. I'll not escape him. He'll have my head."
Man. So, chaos again, and they don't know what's happening, the fighting that they think. And that's, we now know, it's a reread. We know the fighting that they hear, that might be some fighting between Stannis and his men. It's really the ghost of Renly, all right? And it's the Tyrells. They're bearing down, and they're still pissed about all the stuff that happened to Renly, and they were going to be marching on King's Landing, had all this glory. I kind of think that was an easy sell for Littlefinger, I think. I mean, like, Stannis did you wrong. You know something dark went down. Renly, your king, was killed. And they didn't throw themselves behind Stannis. A lot of other people did, but they did not. They were the major host there. And now here we have them marching towards the city, and you've got the ghost of Renly out there doing his thing. Somebody's wearing Renly's armor, right? running around in the vanguard, by the way, in the middle of it, in the heat of it, winning all of the honor and all of that stuff. And that person, okay, would be fired up and pissed about losing Renly. Pissed enough and upset that they want to make a memorable kind of impression and do something almost in his honor. You know what I mean? So, and I'm Loras, right? Mm-hmm. Loras is that guy. But that's the chaos and the confusion that we're hearing, that they're the remnants of this idea that there's some type of battle taking place out there and there's confusion. The real story doesn't get to the queen, and there's still Lancel thinks we're in a dire situation. He's falling to his knees, essentially saying, cursing Cersei because she pulled her son back inside. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you have Sansa having all of this internal dialogue too of ill and pain. And again, this is not just one chapter. We sort of have to look at this in terms of its bigger arc, which starts with Davos, goes and then is going back and forth between Tyrion. And the whole thing this entire time has been, again, we start with Davos, we get blown up.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is getting blown up with wildfire. Then we start cutting to Tyrion, and things just get worse and worse. And worse, and we feel like we're gonna lose here. And now it's like everything's lost. It's over. But then the chapter sort of takes a turn, and it's sort of interesting that it ends up just sort of out of nowhere being like, hey, we're gonna win. We've won, actually. It's crazy.
Yeah. It is. And Dantus the Fool is the one running around and kind of, you know, telling all of this, and we're getting all of this from Sansa's perspective. You know, so what's interesting about, he brought up the Tyrion thing, unreliable narrator, we've got Sansa here and all of this chaos, what's real, what is not real, it's so hard to kind of tell because there's the mixture of, did Dantos really show up and say this, was Sir Ilyn Payne more present than we realize because of Sansa's mind, we're seeing into her mind and she's just constantly feeling his presence and he's there, and really maybe he was only there for a split second, or maybe Cersei said something and he was like, you know what I mean, like the mind that we're looking through, the lens that we're looking through is Cersei or Sansa's mind, and it can be a bit skewed, or some things are amplified and some are dampened because of what's important or what's at stake or whatever. So yeah, you're right, she's now then going into the bedchamber where she meets the Hound. Is that how much of all of this is true? How much of this is important? And we say this because a lot of people have brought up the unkissed theory. They've talked about this before. George has said there is something to it, and that she is, and that when being asked about it, and I don't have the direct like what convention it was that he was asked about. He always does the whole read and find out, or at the, you know, at that time. Now it's wait until I finish the book and find out, which is fine. I say wait and finish it. I'm never, you know, mocking George because I love George, okay? And I think he needs all the time in the world to finish this because it's intricate. But Sansa is going in here, and he said that she's an unreliable narrator. And at times, Sir Matt, they can be telling the truth, and they can be the person that we rely on, and they can also be that person that we don't trust because of their age or because of the situation and the context. Like, you could have it's all about motivations. It's not even necessarily like you don't trust the younger children or those who are not adults, because you have poorly motivated adults who are doing things for their own gain, for their own reason, and saying things that are misleading or misremembering things from their childhood. So anyways, It's such a fascinating thing, these batch of chapters, to look at what the chaos of battle can do and how it can distort the mind and how it can make you think about things differently or whatever. And George tries to write that. And I'm just wondering how it's going to matter. Why is it going to matter and play out later?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There's so much confusion going on in this, especially in these past two chapters. Now, as I guess one of the things I'm going to pull out from this chapter, because I'm just sort of thinking about it when you read them back to back like this, the past chapter, Sir Mandon Moore tries to kill Tyrion, right? Mm-hmm. and then Pod sort of kills him.
Mm-hmm.
At that point in time, it seemed like all was lost, and then we go even further into the idea of all is lost.
Mm-hmm.
What was the point if you're Sir Mandon Moore? Because why would you waste time trying to kill Tyrion when everything we're seeing right now seems like, I mean, if what if Tywin doesn't show up? Or even if he does, you're talking about a siege that's taking over a castle. Like, you're not 100% sure that, like, what's the difference of you trying to kill Tyrion or you going in this? Because now we have all this extra context right here. I mean, from their perspective, it's like, hey, Joffrey just left. The Hound's gone.
Right.
No one can find Ser Manon Mor. And until the Tyrells and Tywin show back up to save the city, I mean, it's like, hey, Sansa's freaking out about thinking about Ser Aelin Payne. And then you can go back just a little bit to that last chapter, just a few, you know, paragraphs ago. And it's like, what was really sort of the point of him trying to kill Tyrion if now we have this new context to know it might not even have mattered? Because Tyrion might have died and you might have died.
That's the thing, too, is that, like, even if they, like, if they prevail, if Joffrey's forces prevail, which they do, then that's awesome. But at the time, what you're saying is at the time, it's not everything around them is like, this doesn't look good. Until the ghost of Renly shows up, stuff doesn't seem great. Stannis still has a chance. Even though they were successful on the Blackwater, there's still a chance. Ser Manon Mor is well equipped to think and to see ahead in the forecast of this battle and to see that it maybe isn't going to go in his favor. And I guess it's sort of like a coin toss almost for him. Like, I was paid to do this. I'm hired to do it, or it's personal. Maybe there's something more. We talked about the connection that he has back to the Vale and how much Tyrion pissed the Vale off, right? And Bronn, trial by combat, killing a friend of his, the whole thing. But also, is it someone? Would there be more guarantee from Stannis or someone else? Like that, you just caused me to say, is there another person on the other side of this fight that would want to kill Tyrion? And what would that really accomplish? Deal. Yeah. You know,
I'm just thinking at that specific moment, it feels like Tyrion, you know, it feels like the perspective we're getting in the chapter of the past few handfuls of chapters is like, it's all about to lose. And we see right now that Tyrion has just, at least the way he describes it, has killed a couple people. So, and if you're Manon Mor, you would almost have to know that Tywin's about to show up.
Yeah.
In order to try to pull that off at that moment. But now we're just a little bit into the next chapter. And again, this is from somebody else's total perspective. And again, we're talking about a chapter that is now with the Sansa chapter and the Unkiss and everything that is later questioned by George. So could it actually be that the things she's hearing might not be as bad as we think they are, because she's freaking out about Ser Aelin Payne and she's thinking he's coming for me. Is she hearing things about, like, well, Joffrey fell back and everything? Could it actually be could this whole chapter be totally subject where what she's hearing Lancel say might not even be true, right? It's sort of like when you hear a full conversation, but you pick out specific pieces of it, of, you know, information. We see this in politics and everything, right? Where it's, hey, this politician says this whole long thing, but you pull out this one thing where they say this is going to be the new policy. It's like, no, that's not at all the case, right? It's the context of it. It's just so interesting to go back just a few paragraphs, which goes into the last chapter, because now we're here hearing everything's gone, we've lost. Now this chapter obviously ends with it, and George is just taking us through this roller coaster sort of emotions, but I guess it's just sort of causing me to question, what was the point, right? Because they specifically say Ser Manon's gone, and why is there's a lot of other Kingsguard members. Why is Ser Manon Mor the one that's brought up? Hey, we don't know where he is. They don't say all the other Kingsguard members are, you know, the other sort of Kingsguard members are, we know their whereabouts. I mean, they bring up the Hound, but they don't bring up everybody else, mm-hmm. right? They don't bring up, hey, here's all these other sort of big general and all these other people we know. But they talk about, hey, Ser Manon, he's gone. So that means that Cersei would have had to have, which we've already come to sort of establish, right? Cersei specifically wanted reporting on him.
Yeah, and so those are the big kind of contenders. I mean, you have Cersei, you have Littlefinger, you have Joffrey. I mean, the Kingsguard, right? If the king tells you to do something, do it. I mean, right? I mean, if Joffrey says to do, that's one of the things that the Kingsguard is scolded about later. And it was like, why did you, you know, do the terrible things you did to Sansa? Or why did you let some of the things that happened just under, while Joffrey was there, he commands the Kingsguard to do things that are dishonorable and unrespectable, disrespectful. Why let that happen? And they basically say the king said to do it, so we're going to do it. They almost don't understand why Jaime, you know, would even question that, but it's like he has a regent. And this actually is something that's brought up in, back in the histories. I forget which king it is, but he wants to marry his sister, and they go off and they kind of do their own thing. And basically, the Kingsguard. Do they listen to the king, or do they listen to the queen regent, or who are they supposed to take orders from? You know, so Joffrey could have been someone that ordered that hit, if you will. But really, I think, just so folks know, if you missed last week's conversation, Littlefinger seemingly is a guy who has tried to take Tyrion down a couple times, and the one weird thing about this is you talk about the connection that Sir Mandon Moore has to the Vale, but yet both members, Jon Arryn and I forget the other guy who's close to the Vale, neither one of those members were particularly fond of Sir Mandon the Moore.
Yeah.
You know? So, I don't know, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Okay, as we'll go a little bit further here. So again, just sort of playing on that, building the suspense here. She's freaking out about Sir Ilyn coming to get me. Old gods and old woman wailed, "We're lost. The battle's lost. She's running. Several children were crying. They can smell the fear." Sansa finds herself alone on the dais. She should stay here or run after the queen and plead for her life. She never knew why she got to her feet, but she did. So again, there's sort of another indicator to this chapter where it's like, hey, just like we've seen with these Tyrion chapters, the next thing you knew, I was here. So it's almost like, again, building that sort of, I guess, unreliability, if you want to go with that. "Don't be afraid," she told them loudly. "The queen has raised the drawbridge. This is the safest place in the city. There's thick walls, the moat, the spikes." People start demanding they tell her what's happening. She's saying, "Joffrey's going to come back for us." She's lying. The last was a lie. She's saying, "I know they'll fight bravely." All of this stuff. She commands Moonboy to make them laugh. He does a cartwheel. Sort of this thing. Sansa goes to Lancel and kneels beside him. "Madness," he gasps. "Gods, the imp was right. He was right. Help him." Sansa commands two of the serving men. So she's in here kind of running things. And then she's starting to think to herself, you know, "I'm soft and weak and stupid, just as Joffrey said. I should be killing him, not helping him." Thinking of Lancel. Mm-hmm. Crazy. Then she starts to go... command some more things. Sir Dantas climbed the dais while all eyes were on the other fool. "Go back to your bedchamber, sweet Jonquil," he whispered. "Lock yourself in. You'll be safe there." She says, "Someone will come for me," Sansa thought, "but will it be you or will it be Sir Ilyn?" For a mad moment, she thought of begging Dantas to defend her. He had been a knight too, trained with a sword. Then she goes, "No, he has not the courage nor the skill. I would only be killing him as well." Took all of her strength to walk slowly from the queen's ballroom when she wanted to run. And when she reached the steps, though, she does run. And this is because she was trying to sort of stay, you know, looking, playing the part, not to sort of frighten anybody else. Her bedchamber was black as pitch. Sansa barred the door. When she ripped back the drapes, her breath caught in her throat. The southern sky was a whirl with glowing, shifting colors, the reflections of the great fires that burned yellow. Green tides moved against the bellies of the cloud in pools of orange light. So there's fire, you know, the emerald and jades of wildfire. All of this stuff is going on. She backs away from the window thinking, "I'll go to sleep." And then something stirred behind her. A hand reached out of the dark and grabbed her. She opened her mouth to scream, but another hand clamped down on her face. "Little bird, I knew you'd come." The voice was a drunken rasp. And then the light sort of is in there and it fades. And he was only a hulking darkness in a stained white cloak. "If you scream, I'll kill you. Believe that." He took his hand from her mouth. Her breath was becoming ragged. The hound had a flagon of wine. "Don't you want to ask who's winning the battle, little bird?" "Who?" she says. "I only know who's lost. Me. He is drunken than I've ever seen him." what have you lost? He says, all. The burnt half of his face with a mask of dried blood. Bloody dwarf should have killed him years ago. He's dead, they say. Dead? No, bugger that. I don't want him dead. I want him burned. If the gods are good, they'll burn him, but I won't be here to see. I'm going. And then you say, I'm going to leave. I'm going to get out of here. You promised me a song. She didn't know what that means. Says, everything scares you. You know, look at me. Look at me. The blood masked the worst of his stars. His eyes were white with white and wide and terrifying. The burnt corner of his mouth twitched and twitched again. Sounds like it could smell him, a stink of sweat and sour wine and stale vomit and all over the reek of blood, blood, blood. He says, I can keep you safe. You know, they're afraid of me. No one would hurt you. He yanked her closer, and for a moment, she thought he meant to kiss her. He was too strong to fight. She closed her eyes, wanting it to be over, but nothing happened. Still can't bear to look, can you? She heard him say. He gave her arm a hard wrench, pulling her around and shoving her down to the bed. I'll have that song. His dagger was out, poised at her throat. Sing, little bird, sing for your little life. Her throat was dry and tight with fear, and every song she had ever known fled from her mind. Please don't kill me. She wanted to scream. Please don't. And so it goes on. Then she sorts of, the gentle mother, Front of Mercy, is the song she's hearing. So now you have a scene where the hound is, you know, in forcefully throwing Sansa around to the bed and everything like that. And this will come into sort of the reliability of this chapter, right? Which is, later she thinks that she did kiss the hound. Here we don't see that happen. So what exactly is actually going on here?
Well, yeah. So that's the question. Is it and I guess at this point we can just full on go into
absolutely.
Yeah. So we have a situation where Sansa shows up and into her bedchamber. Sandor is there. He's fled the battle. He's bleeding and he knew she would come. He wants his song. Why, first of all, Sir Matt, why is he there? What's his motivation? Why didn't he just leave the city right away? What does he want?
Right.
One of the things in an earlier chapter, and I know folks are going to, we don't know necessarily what happened in this moment. There's lots of speculation, some of it good, some of it love story, some of it much more assault and things basically that were hinted at.
Rape.
Yeah, things that were hinted at that, like, what happens during the... Like, Cersei kept saying the things that would happen, you know, to young women in the city, young and old, right? I mean, that this is something that happens, this fever, whatever. I don't know what you would call it. It's terrible, right? But this happens during a siege. And so a lot of people have said, maybe this is a coping mechanism. Maybe she frames this all in her mind, this romantic mind of hers, that this is a kiss that didn't happen, because George has basically only said that the kiss didn't happen, didn't say other things didn't happen,
right?
You know, and then he lays down a bloody cloak, a white, you know what I'm saying? So Matt, like, the pure white cloak, right? The innocence, and then it's bloodstained, and that's what he tore off, and that's what he left in her bedchamber. So there's a lot of things that would indicate that what the hound did here is not good, but she's romanticized it. Because it's what she has done. She's grown up, and she's a very young girl,
right? And it should be noticed that, and I will say that the nature of the kiss also changes over the story, because it's brought up a few different times.
Yes, yeah, go over that. Yeah.
So the first time it's brought up is in A Storm of Swords. So it says, Sansa comes to this is from the wiki. Sansa come to remember the scenario slightly differently, remembering that Sandor Clegane also kissed her. This is from a Storm of Swords chapter. Mega couldn't sing, but she was mad to be kissed. She and Alla played a kissing game sometimes, she confessed, but it wasn't the same as kissing a man, much less a king. Sansa wondered what Mega would think about kissing the hound, as she had. He'd come to her the night of the battle, stinking of wine and blood. He kissed me and threatened to kill me and made me sing a song. So there you have a scenario in which that's not necessarily a romantic kiss.
Yeah,
that's still sort of a sort of forceful kiss, which still, I mean, that goes along with it. But again, reliability of the narrator, or maybe she's changing it because she's remembering it differently. Regardless, it's a bad situation. And she's saying he kissed me, so maybe so adding something in her mind that didn't happen, but regardless, then the Hound remembers it differently. The Hound is, this is a chapter, this is from, let me see here, A Storm of Swords, Arya 13, chapter 74. This is when the Hound is running around with Arya. In contrast, as he lays dying, Sandor thinks of the song Sansa had sung to him, but doesn't mention a kiss. He tells Arya Stark, "And the little bird, your pretty sister, I stood there in my white cloak and let them beat her. I took the bloody song. She never gave it. I meant to take her too. I should have. I should have to her body and ripped her heart out before leaving her for that dwarf." So there he doesn't think that he kissed her, but he's obviously thinking he should do far worse than what actually happened in the first place. Again, in Feast for Crows, we continue on here. Mm-hmm. In the Eyrie, Sansa thinks of the unkiss again. This is from Elaine 2, which is Sansa, right? Mm-hmm. A Feast for Crows, chapter 41. As the boy's lips touched her own, she found herself thinking of another kiss. She could still remember how it felt, with his cruel mouth pressed down on her own. He had come to Sansa in the darkness as green fire filled the sky. He took a song and a kiss and left me nothing but a bloody cloak. She then thinks of it again. Yeah, this is from A Feast for Crows, Lane 2, same thing. She thought of Tyrion and of the Hound and how he'd kissed her and gave her a nod. And so then you have quotes by George R. R. Martin. You'll see in A Storm of Swords in later volumes that Sansa remembers the Hound kissing her the night he came to her bedroom. But if you look at the scene, he never does. That will eventually mean something, but now it's just a subtle touch, something most of the readers may not even pick up on. File this one under unreliable narrator and feel free to ponder its meaning. So George confirms that it's sort of an unreliable narrator thing. Now, there's definitely a lot of fan art and stuff that shows it potentially as even more of a romantic kiss, but I don't see any of that sort of in any of the text. But it does, her nature of how she describes it over the course of books, it does make it seem a little less and less, I don't know, I guess, you know, it's less suddenly, and it could just be because of the description of the chapter and what's going on. But, you know, it starts out and it's, you know, he comes, he throws me down and then kisses me, he's threatening to kill me. And then later it's like he left me with only a kiss and a bloody cloak.
Yeah. So that's
far less than, you know, he's potentially trying to rape me and kill me. I mean, it's still bad, but the context of it changes and changes and changes.
Yeah, too. And actually, inside of that, Arya is trying to, when she's talking to him, the Hound, you know, says that about her sister, she's trying to almost like get the Hound to do something. Like I forget what she's doing there. She's pestering, goading him in some way or whatever. And that you can add that to, you know, why he says what he says or amplifies what he says. You know how the Hound throughout all of this is just cursing and just always, he's just a, you know, he's a Hound. He's the Hound. One more thing here too. So some folks will say that the unkiss or misremembering the kiss or whatever is representing, there's a theme with Sansa, and it's not even just the kiss, but that there are times where, like, here's one of the quotes. It's about her losing her mind a little bit, and that she's starting to have maybe some mental health issues or PTSD or whatever.
PTSD, yeah.
Yeah. And so let's see. She realizes that one time she says, "I'm not going to be able to go back to sleep." Sansa realized my head is all a tumult. When Sansa opened her eyes again, she was on her knees. She did not remember falling. Some things were hard to remember, but most came back to her easily, as if she had been there only yesterday. So there are clues, not a lot of them, but maybe that she's blacked out a few times or that she's starting to become overwhelmed with memories and emotions. And you can imagine why, right? She sees her father beheaded. She's possibly assaulted by the Hound at King's Landing. She is assaulted by King's Guard members in front of Joffrey, right? And she, so a lot of terrible things happen. She's mocked and she is made fun of during her own wedding, mocked constantly by Joffrey and talked down to by Cersei completely. All of her friends and family were killed, right? Her septum was killed. Her best friend, Jane Poole, is taken away. She thinks she's dead. Arya's dead as far as she knows. It's terrible. She goes through a terrible amount of things. And so you can see how a person like that, when you think about it, how young she is, she would maybe start to lose her mind a little bit, or almost like some vengeance or some whatever. Like whatever we're going to see from Sansa, whatever drastic, I think it's going to be drastic. I think there's going to be some pretty drastic changes in her character. And yeah, she goes from this girl who's singing songs and reading the fairy tales and the stories and loves to romanticize things and grows up and reality hits her very hard. And she's this innocent who is totally, changed by the war and by all the things that have happened to her and her family. So I don't know. You take that into consideration when you start making the Sansa predictions for Winds of Winter and what might happen with her. Because I think about this Unkissed thing and I think about the Hound coming back and her having some confrontation. A lot of people think Littlefinger might try, you know, he forced a kiss on Sansa, right? So that's what prompted the whole Lysa out the moon door situation. And he forced that onto Sansa. So is he going to do that again? I think probably. And it wouldn't surprise me if all of a sudden something snaps and she does have a clarity moment where she remembers exactly what happened to the Hound, or between her and the Hound. And also, Matt, something that happens in the series is like a lot of times, Margaery Tyrell. So basically, she's been betrothed to Renly and Joffrey and the maesters check to see whether or not her maidenhead is intact. If Sansa is promised off to someone else, it wouldn't surprise me if they go, if there's some revelation where she thinks back about the Hound and that whole night, and it really was like assault and rape. And that won't, George has said he won't write that scene, he wouldn't do that, and that's not something he's going to do, but he would allude to it. And he would just need to do one simple line where she thinks about the Hound and, you know, that night in clarity, and then, you know, yeah. So I kind of think that's what it is. I kind of fall under that, you know, seemingly is his way of, it's his way of saying these are some of the terrible things that happen in war, and it happened to one of our favorite characters, a girl that we, you know, we're behind the Starks, we are rooting for her, and this is a terrible thing that happened to her, and how is that going to affect her? So
yeah. Yeah, it's the whole situation is just, it's crazy, because I'm looking at Reddit theories here to see what people are saying, to see what all they think about it. Some people are questioning whether she has PTSD. It's like, I don't know, man. Sansa of all people might go through the most amount of stuff. I mean, she sees her father beheaded right in front of her. You know, she loses her sister, Arya. She thinks that Joffrey's going to be, she's tormented by Joffrey. And then she's forced to marry Tyrion, and Cersei's mean to her, and so much stuff. And then she's, you know, drug around with Littlefinger. Again, now her story, you know, I think a lot of us are going to think of the show where she's forced into marrying Ramsay, and God, that's just awful.
Awful.
Awful. That to me, that is like the, I still question some, I don't know, I go so back and forth on that in the show and the decision to even,
but
to do that. And I guess on one hand, I'm like, it shines light on the fact that this stuff happens, and it's probably happened, you know, it's so, you're shining side of light. I mean, it's just,
oh yeah, no.
That, I mean, the decision to, I'm glad I was not in the writer's room when they are like, what are we going to do here? Because again, that none of that even happens in the books. Like, right. the whole thing with Ramsay, that none of that even happens. Sorry, go ahead.
Right. So my thought is, what I think they did, and I think what Dan and Dave did, is George gave them bullet points. And one of them is just that Sansa you know, was or is raped at some point. And they said, well, this is the arc we have her on. Where, which pathway, which character could that happen to? And should we throw that in the show? Like, maybe that's what they did. Maybe they took one of the points that George gave them and said, well, we know that's going to happen in the books. So let's go ahead and weave it into this new arc that we've created for Sansa, which is crazy. I don't know. Like, why do that in the show if it's not going to happen in the book? That's just so, I don't know. I know Jane Poole and the, you know, all the terrible stuff that she went through. And maybe that's, you know, some of that more has to do with Ramsay and showing us how terrible he is. But yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to look here to see what some of the theories are. And a lot of it is just, is PTSD, maybe trying to sort of make the situation, think about the situation in a better light, right? With like sort of the, like, will he kiss me? And so maybe sort of romanticize it so it's less bad, I guess. Some people say Stockholm syndrome, you know, this whole, there's a whole lot of thing of it. I mean, I guess maybe the other thing is, I guess you think about it with George has a reason. Maybe it's not even necessarily for this kiss, right? This, maybe like the kiss is just to sort of set up the idea of Sansa being an unreliable narrator, and that's going to play into something later. Like, but it has nothing necessarily to do with this kiss, but it's more just to be like, oh, hey, that's not how this went down. So you then have to sort of look at the lens of a lot of the events and say, well, are we sure this is what actually happens? Mm-hmm. Sort of like we did last week when we sort of analyzed a little bit of this Tyrion stuff and said, well, are we sure this is exactly how it happens? And then we need to sort of question what characters see in their point of view in the first place, right?
Yeah
it might not necessarily be this specific event. This specific event is one thing, but it's like, that's not the purpose of it. The purpose is to, now you can say, well, if she's unreliable here, or a point of view character is unreliable here, then any point of view character could be unreliable at any point.
Yeah, and that's what I say too. It comes and goes. They can't all just be, you know, telling lies and nothing's true and everything.
The entire time.
Chaos, right? Yeah. So, and even in this chapter, we get some actual events, some facts, some things that take place, and it you know, all works out. There's a reason why. And so when you think about, like, what is the reason why she's misremembering this, or she's turned it into a good thing. I mean, a lot of times you don't want to think about a bad memory. This is a coping thing. You don't want to dwell on that or have that be something that sticks with you. So you change it in your mind. You alter it in a way that you can handle and process. And I kind of think that's what she did. And I go back to the Kingsguard bloodstained cloak that he left her.
Right.
And that's really what, for me, what solidified it. And yeah, so.
And ultimately, where do we go from there? Okay. Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, okay. The rest of this chapter as finishes up really quick here. Wow. When the battle is won.
Yeah.
Right. Sort of surprisingly out of nowhere, Tywin Lannister shows up, Randall Tarly, Mace Tyrell, and the ghost of Renly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so there's the thing. Littlefinger comes through, right? I mean, and this is back just real quickly to the Sir Mandon Moore thing. When he leaves, he's trying to, Tyrion has shocked him a couple times. Tyrion has, was it Myrcella? Baratheon, he promised to betroth her to Sweet Robin, totally lied to Littlefinger, played him. Littlefinger hated that, didn't like that. So there's a lot of stuff going on between those two, and I think he would want to take him out. So, but Littlefinger's the guy who went and negotiated this whole situation for the Tyrells. He wins Harrenhal from it, and the Tyrells swoop in there, and now they're in league with the Lannisters. Two richest families kind of in Westeros are allied up together and looking like they're going to be sitting on the throne. So, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Awesome. Okay, Ez. Well, I think that's going to be it for us this week. Next time we're back with the Daenerys chapter where Artisan Whitebeard shows up. It's going to be, and we're talking about the Song of Ice and Fire, guys. So yeah, let us know. Shoot us a comment. As Ez and I are saying, you know, Ez is on vacation, but when he gets back, some sort of changes here are going to be coming across the Matt and Ez Media Network, right, mm-hmm, Ez?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Like more there's gonna be quite a bit more content posted. We're gonna sort of, how do we maximize the amount of content we push out? I guess is sort of the way to do it. And how do we do it in ways that get you more content more often? Because that seems to be what people ask for. Yeah. And so looking at that. So guys, let us know. And in fact, we were thinking about the way we do it over on Here's the Horn is we do like a block of chapters.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're thinking maybe when we hit a Storm of Swords, we might do a block of chapters. You might get one where it's, hey, one or two. It doesn't have to be a chapter by chapter. So just let us know if you guys want Follow Up Friday back or some things like that, where we've talked about doing YouTube Live, doing a lot, some of these more. Hey, we're down for doing the show live, streaming it on YouTube. And you guys can participate while we're recording the episodes. There's all sorts of cool stuff we can do there with YouTube chat and stuff like that too. So you can interact with us as we're recording. So just a lot of things. So shoot us a email at btkcast. And guys, just let us know. What all you interested? What all do you want?
Yeah, and also don't forget, follow us on social media. So you can follow Matt at Super Gains Bros, follow me at Womprat_2M, and a lot of you guys already do, and you guys message us, and I try to get back to everybody. If I see it in the request folder, just takes a second for me to go in there and kind of find it. But yeah, send us a message, and I would love to chat with you about format ideas. If you have ideas for the show, things you want us to talk about on the show, I think that'd be fantastic. So I'm excited to see what we want to change here moving forward. So.
Absolutely. All right, guys, with that, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Chapter 63, Daenerys 5 of A Clash of Kings.
If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you in a week, and remember that winter is coming.